Dr. Salmon.
Well, it's my pleasure to bring back in front of you Stephen Hicks, who is our new early childhood assistant state superintendent. And he is going to give you a great overview of our what we consider is a high-quality childhood education system in Maryland. And this is something all the board is very, very interested in and very committed to, as well as myself. So we're looking forward to hearing from Stephen. And then later in the superintendent's report, you're going to get to hear from a director of a Judy Center. And so we're going to take time to look at the other end of it out in the LEAs later this afternoon. So I'll turn it over to Stephen, and thank you.
Thank you, Dr. Salmon.
Welcome.
And, thank you. And thank you for having me back. I know that you've wanted this presentation for a few months now, and it's exciting to be able to share this information with you. Our topics today, the things we're going to share about, are first and foremost about quality and the early childhood system in Maryland and what we're doing to ensure that all children have access, or as many as we can, have access to high-quality early education. A little bit about our governance structure in Maryland, which is a little bit different than some of the other states, and then some of our initiatives, but not all of the initiatives. And if there's anything in the presentation that you'd like to hear more about, please do let me know, and someone from my staff or myself can come and share it with you. We know the research shows that children need a high-quality early learning experience to ensure their success in school and in life. Unfortunately, many children don't get that, and we can see those disparities as early as 9 months. We know that there are indispensables. There are things that an early childhood system must have and that must be in place for children to have high quality. It isn't enough that children go to a child care center or a pre-K program. It must be of high quality, and it must be part of a system that has all of these different elements in place. We must ensure that there are strong relationships between the teacher and the student. Maryland has a very unique governance structure. The Division of Early Childhood Development works across all the other divisions at the Department of Education. And in the division, we have three central branches: Collaboration and Program Improvement Branch, which oversees the Judy Center's family engagement, as well as the Early Childhood Advisory Councils, which I'll talk about in a moment; the Office of Child Care, which is the largest branch overseeing licensing, subsidy, credentialing, and also the Maryland Excels program; and then the Early Learning Branch that oversees the pre-K program right now, the pre-K expansion program, which is funded from the federal government and also the state match. We have multiple early childhood settings from birth through third grade in Maryland, and our division is working to ensure that quality is front and center in all of them. We also work very closely with the Division of Special Education and Early Intervention, because that program oversees the infant and toddler program, the pre-K program for children with disabilities, as well as, of course, K through 21, age 21. We've been noticed for our quality by the National Institute for Early Education Research, a publication that comes out every year looking at pre-K programs across the country. We are 14th in quality along with several other states. The areas in which we fall down on their rankings are the qualifications for our instructional assistant, the set number of students in a classroom of 20 or fewer, and also the amount of professional development that is offered for our teachers. Some of those are dictated by the law we have here in Maryland regarding pre-K quality. So the major program that we have in Maryland is the state pre-K program, and that is mandated for every jurisdiction to provide at least half a day of pre-K for students from low-income families, students at 185% federal poverty rate or below. Many jurisdictions put in their own funds to improve the quality, either by extending the day or by having higher quality teachers in the classroom. The Pre-K Expansion Grant, funded from the U.S. Department of Education in collaboration with the Department of Health and Human Services, sought to increase the quality of programs. And one of the things that it did do was stimulate jurisdictions to improve the quality of all of their programs, not just those that were funded from the Pre-K Expansion Grant. As you can see in this case, the Pre-K Expansion Grant required class sizes of no more than 20 students. They have to be a full-day program, and they have to be very inclusive of children with disabilities, as well as supporting children at 200% federal poverty and below. Currently, we fund this program through the federal grant, as well as a state match. Head Start, which is, we have a collaboration director in our office, has many requirements for quality, so I won't go through the entire performance standards, but they have quality for the birth through five programs, and they vary based on the age of the kids, infants or toddlers or pre-K students. In Maryland, we have a quality rating and improvement program called Maryland Excels, which was funded in large part by the Race to the Top Early Learning Challenge grant that Maryland received in 2010. This is the Maryland Excels Level 5. It's primarily focused on improving the quality of childcare, but schools can also join Excels and be rated at different levels. You have several handouts that talk about Excels and that also talk about the inventory of the programs that have different levels of Excels, which is the quality rating, or are accredited programs. I'm happy to say that we reached a benchmark this past week with 300 programs at level 5 in Maryland, which is quite an achievement. While there were incentives for these programs during Race to the Top Early Learning Challenge to get higher quality ratings, those incentives no longer exist, but programs are still working to improve the quality of their program. Parents have the opportunity to see this information, the quality of the program, the star rating, 1 to 5, for example, and also find out where a child care center might be near their home or near their work and how to access those. And there are three different websites that parents can access. One is through our resource and referral agency headed by the Maryland Family Network. Another is through the Maryland Excels program operated through CTE at Johns Hopkins that looks and ranks those quality programs. And then we have our own website that parents can also go to find a program that meets their needs. We have a few initiatives I'd like to point out very quickly on promoting the coordinated early learning system in Maryland, improving access to high quality throughout the state, implementing K through 3 gauges, and also expanding pre-K. We have had a state early care and education advisory council for a long time. Race to the Top Early Learning Challenge funded individual early childhood advisory councils in each jurisdictions. Currently, they are at various levels of quality and implementation. Some of them are very strong. Others need a lot of support. So we're working to support them because those I see as a real linchpin to ensuring not only that we have this state system of early childhood that is high quality, but that every jurisdiction has their own micro system of early care and education that is of high quality. We have worked, as I said, to promote high quality through Excels and also through the accreditation program. We are also looking, and you've probably seen this a lot in the legislative hearings, about improving the subsidy rate. So the governor released the two top frozen eligibility tiers for subsidy, enabling more families, more low-income families, to have access to those subsidies so they can seek high-quality early education experiences for their children, parents that are working, parents that are going back to school. There is legislation, and the governor has talked about raising the subsidy rate by 8%. It is among the lowest in the nation right now. We are also looking at what it might take to improve the eligibility tables. So currently in Comar, we have eligibility tables that are outdated, so they really reflect about 33% of state median income. So for example, a family of three has to make below $30,000 to be eligible for a subsidy.
Excuse me, could you just go back to the last slide?
Yes.
So the top tier is the $30,000
for a family.
Is that 200%? Is that what we're talking about there? Or?
Well, actually, so we have the tables set up, and they actually reflect 33% of state median income. And what that means is, for a family of three, $30,000. Because it's 33% of the state median income, which would be about $60,000. We also have Judy Center Hubs, which I know you're familiar with. These hubs are primarily located at Title I schools, and they work to coordinate the early care and education system in the catchment area. So not only do they work at the pre-K at that school and the kindergarten to work on transitions, but they also work at all the different early childhood settings that are in that area, such as Head Start, child care, home visiting, infant and toddler care, faith-based providers, etc. We have been working at the division to create a project-based inquiry curricula that we can offer free for our childcare teachers and our pre-K teachers if they want them. This is for four-year-olds. We will also be working on one for three-year-olds. It's a web-based, free, open-source curricula that teachers will be using using tablets, and we have a coordination with Apple to do this. And it's being produced by the University of Maryland. We have, and I know you know of this, the Striving Readers Comprehensive Literacy Grant, the $45 million grant from the U.S. Department of Education over 3 years. This has helped Maryland to galvanize around literacy, looking preschool or birth, sorry, to 12th grade, and we created a comprehensive literacy plan for the state. We are also holding a competition for jurisdictions, and one of the things they have to do is have their own comprehensive literacy plan that covers birth to 12th grade for their children. But a lot of the funding must go to support birth to five, 15%, as well as 40% of the funding that subgranted supports K through 3. So there's a lot of funding for early childhood learning there. We are looking at implementing gauges for K through 3. I know that was a piece of the ESSA plan to look at how children are doing prior to the PARC test. So currently, the only gauge we have is the KRA. Unfortunately, the KRA is not given to all students, so it really can't be used as a gauge. So we're working with Education Council and CCSSO, the Council of Chief State School Officers, to identify what other states are using for gauges to see what might be a good gauge to use for in that spectrum of preschool through kindergarten, third grade prior to the PARC test. We are closing in on the last year of the pre-K expansion grants, the grants I spoke before about that have these very high quality benchmarks for the programs. This is our third year of implementation. We have one more year in the 18-19 school year, and then that funding will no longer be available. There is another preschool development grants program that we're waiting for Congress to approve a budget to see if that is funded, but it is not the same kind of program that we've been using here for four-year-olds. It's more of a coordination of early childhood program. And finally, I just want to reiterate the
follow up on that. So what happens when that grant runs out? What effect does that have on our program?
So currently, every county has pre-K expansion grant programs, and some of them are in schools, and some of them are in community-based settings. So we will, if those programs are going to continue, and if we're going to leverage and maximize that investment, because it's not just the federal government, it's also the state match that has been contributing to those programs. if we're going to leverage those, we do need to find another funding source.
What percentage of our pre-K programs will be affected by that?
I do not know the exact percentage, but I will find that information out to you. It's a relatively small percentage. In the program was set up in two ways, to create brand new high quality slots and also to improve the quality of existing slots. So if you see in the FY19 target, next year we hope to have 1,750 new slots. So for those to continue past that date, they would have to find additional funding. So that's relatively small. We right now have about 40% of our entering kindergartners in pre-K. So that's a pretty small amount for the whole state. But I'll get that exact figure. I don't want to misquote it. For the improved slots, those are slots that already existed, but they've been improved in quality. So maybe a half day pre-K slot or a half day Head Start slot has been expanded to be full day, because we know that many children need a higher dosage of those early education experiences. Sometimes the funding has been used to provide comprehensive services, family engagement, screenings, etc., to ensure quality for the program, but also success for the child. So if the 3,100 slots aren't improved, they may go back to half day. They may go back to having a teacher that necessarily doesn't have a bachelor's degree. Ideally, those slots that were already in existence will continue. Unfortunately, they may not be of the high quality that we know is necessary.
So, President Samiri, could I add something to that? So, part of the Kerwin package of legislation does include additional funds for pre-K 3- and 4-year-olds. Hopefully, we'll see some funds that will come to that could help in the next fiscal year increase what we're providing, hopefully. But as Stephen said, it is a concern, and we are definitely looking for what we can do for
the
future.
The legislation, is that enough money to replace and augment?
I'm going to defer to Deputy Michael. We don't really know until the money gets put to it fiscally. We don't have that figure yet. I'm hoping it would do more than augment. I'm hoping it would expand tremendously. At least that was the direction that the policy recommendation went from Kerwin.
Yeah.
It's really important.
And that's been turned into legislation that's been introduced already this
Correct.
Year, I think. So maybe, is Patrick here this afternoon? Maybe we can ask him about this.
Patrick is planning to update the board on that and where the progress of that legislation.
Patrick. See you soon.
He's coming up soon.
Thank you, Dr. Sabin.
There's also a bill that would increase the state contribution for the federal Head Start program, which means that there can be summer programs for these kids, so there's not a summer loss, and so that some of those half-day programs are expanded to full day with higher quality, very similar to the goals of the pre-K development grant on improving slots. This past summer, there was a work group. The legislature had a bill that passed to form. MSDE led that work group. There were 9 recommendations that were then passed on to the Kerwin Commission. I just want to point out one of the recommendations. Number 2, the work group committee came up with the funds flowing. Pre-K funding would flow through MSDE and then make grants to school systems and then also community-based programs. I think for efficiency, it would probably work better if the state does like many states do, and they make grants to the local, the LEAs, and then those LEAs make grants to community-based settings and also to their schools, so that they can coordinate that mini system, as I was talking about before. The pushback on that is community-based providers are afraid that they may not get enough of that participation. So one of the recommendations was that at full implementation, at least 50% of the slots are in community-based programs. This is something that West Virginia has done very successfully. They had that mandate for 50%, and in fact, currently they're at more like 70 or 75%. So it really has helped to make a mixed delivery system. And if we are to implement a pre-K program for all four-year-olds, and then also for low-income three-year-olds, as is in the draft recommendation for the Kerwin program, we are going to need to depend on a mixed delivery system.
Right.
So that's the conclusion of my presentation, and I'd be happy to answer any questions.
Dr. Hurtings.
Thanks for the thorough presentation. I appreciate it very much. What is the funding model for what you're suggesting? So talk me through it again.
If sure.
The funds go from MSDE to an LEA, the LEA then has grants that go to a community-based preschool program that they would use to fund their operation and then take students who would be public school students or would be private school students, or am I, help me through some of those details for what
sure.
you're recommending.
So the funds would flow to the LEA, and then the LEA would disperse those funds through their schools where they would students would still be public school students, or they would fund, the funds would go to a community-based setting. I don't think those students would be considered public school students. They would be considered public fund in a public pre-kindergarten program funded by the state, but not necessarily school students because they're not in the school. But some of those details actually would need to be worked out, and there are many different options. So sometimes in some systems, the teacher in a community-based setting might be an employee of the school. In others, the LEA just makes the funding to the community-based setting, and the employee
Correct.
Is actually an employee of the community-based settings. Those details would be worked out once we, I think the Kerwin Commission makes its recommendation.
Yeah, and just to note, that model's been used for years. Worcester County was one of the first on the shore to expand to community-based centers and put public school teachers there. We don't have all of our schools aren't equipped to deal with and won't be equipped to deal with the additional students, and certainly won't be able to build facilities to do that. So this mixed model is a way to make sure we get to more kids and have more kids exposed. And it's really worked well on the systems that I know that are using it through that process that Stephen just described.
And I think we favor this system because it would be easier for our better for our division to be monitoring, providing technical assistance for 24 different mini systems, these LEAs, rather than monitoring the hundreds and hundreds of individual pre-K programs. We just wouldn't have the capacity for that.
Right. There has to be some sort of model with community centers. Just the facilities cost of moving to the
right,
type of
exactly.
pre-K expansion would be
yes.
prohibitive.
Yeah.
But if I heard you correct, Dr. Salmon, you said it would be a public school teacher in the community center teaching those students. I'm
yeah,
trying to figure out where the role is there are many faith-based pre-K programs out there.
Yeah, they're mixed. They don't always have that. I think that is one model, and counties may have several of those models operating. So they do have faith-based systems that have a grant to offer the programs. It just seems to be, again, we want them to be in the Excels process. We want them to be at level 5, so we're offering high-quality programs to all of our children. And certainly the LEAs, I know, for example, in where I was superintendent in Talbot, we actually built a space for Head Start in two elementary schools, and then anytime there was professional development, those Head Start teachers were able to come and have the same professional development as the regular ed teachers for the public school. So there's lots of different models out there that work well. We do have an answer to Dr. Guyton's question. Deputy Michael, can you answer that?
Okay. Sure. I just took a quick look at the legislation. It says that beginning in FY 2020, the governor shall include an amount equal to what was provided in FY 19. So moving forward in terms of pre-K expansion, that the state would be required to fund the same amount as was provided in prior years. And then I believe there are other recommendations from the Kerwin Commission that may come out in the final report that go even further than that.
Helpful. Thank you. Other questions, Dr. Lee?
I'm just a little concerned about the quality of these pre-K centers as they expand. Mm-hmm. And looking at the chart, a huge percentage are quality rating one, which looks very minimal for the Excels thing. Mm-hmm. And then the numbers that are actually accredited are even smaller percentage-wise. So is there what is the plan or the discussion going around that in terms of ensuring that more of them can be helped to? But I feel like it's going to be limited by the providers and recruitment of staff, which might not be such an easy thing to overcome.
Right. So the goal is to get more programs in these this quality rating and improvement system. Maryland excels. So everyone that's licensed starts out as a one. Now, everyone does not choose to be published because they may not be want to be published as, well, we're just a one. That's not a lot to celebrate because that's kind of the minimum requirements. Also, a lot of programs may be going through accreditation, and they may be at a different level, but they haven't published that yet. So they may want to wait until they're published at a what we consider higher quality, a four or a five. So they may be waiting in the wings. But our goal is to get more programs in Excels and to get more programs at that higher quality rating. Now that the incentives are not available through Race to the Top Early Learning Challenge, we have to look at other ways in which we can incentivize, either financially or through technical assistance or other resources. So that is going to be one of the goals that we look forward to working on, and a primary goal for our division, improving the quality of programs.
Good. I have a quick question.
Okay, last one.
So if a student, or rather, I guess, if their parents want their child to be enrolled in pre-K, and the student isn't someone that is requiring, I guess, sort of state aid where they're not in a position where they're financially needing assistance, mm-hmm. Does that student have the chance to attend pre-K, but then their family has to pay for it? Or do they have the option to attend, like, a kindergarten program, but then they would have to test into it? Like, I'm just wondering, what would that process look like if you weren't a student that was receiving financial aid?
That's a great question. Unfortunately, right now in Maryland and in many states throughout the country, we have inequitable access to pre-K at all, especially high-quality pre-K experiences. So if you are making, family is above 185% federal poverty level, you may not have access to publicly funded pre-K in your community. So your other options would be going to a private provider. And many families, unfortunately, they're they make too much money to qualify for a subsidy, which is the voucher that you can take to any pre-K program, including faith-based programs. You may make too much for that, but too little to be able to take that out of your budget to pay for an infant toddler care or pre-K care. So right now we do not have what you would, I think you would, you're asking about universal pre-K for four-year-olds, and we certainly don't have that for three-year-olds.
Okay, and then just a follow-up to that, mm-hmm. In the work that the Curwen Commission is doing for those that are participating in that sort of dialogue, is that where the commission is trying to take us, like, years from now? Is that even on the table and being discussed?
Yes. It's one of the policy recommendations to increase pre-K, high-quality pre-K programs. But right now it's stated, and Stephen, you can correct me if I'm not wording this correctly, but for all 3- and 4-year-olds that require it or need it. So it's more of a need-based recommendation than it is universal pre-K.
The recommendation that we have right now, and what seems to be in the draft of the Curwen Commission's recommendation, is that we should provide pre-K in Maryland for all 4-year-olds, beginning with the kids that are from low-income families, and that would be free for them. And then there'd be a sliding scale for families above 300% federal level poverty level, and then 3-year-olds that are below the that are from low-income families would also be provided with free pre-kindergarten experiences at three. And this would be over 10 years, and ultimately the idea would be to have at least pre-K for four-year-olds be considered part of public education. You know, you don't kids go to kindergarten, full-day kindergarten in this state. Not all states, but in this state they do, and they don't have to pay for the second half of that pre-K, the kindergarten, or any of the kindergarten. So it would be part of public education.
Thank you.
It was certainly voiced many times by myself for universal pre-K.
Okay, thank you so much.
Thank
you. Do you need anything else from us at this time?
No, thank you very much.
Very good. Thank you.
Thank you, Stephen.